afternoon. This is Live Free Austin. Live Free Austin on 98.9 FM, The Big Talker. More stimulating talk. John Bush, Jason Rink, got a great show lined up for you today, folks. We're going to be chatting a little bit about government intervention in the market, the Federal Reserve Bank. Wah, 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 wah. Later, we'll be joined by Robert Murphy. He's an Austrian economist, author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Capitalism. We're also going to bring you some big government news we know that you love so much. But to start the show, maybe I'll start with a question for Jason here. Jason, now that the GOP has taken a majority in the House of Representatives, do you agree?
You know, I've been reflecting on this week, and I do feel more free to criticize both the Republicans and the Democrats for being shills for big government.
You didn't feel that way before. You weren't holding back before.
Well, I feel more free now because I think people were like, hey, if only the Republicans get into power,
we'll be safe.
We'll be fine. And now they're going to have to prove it. They're going
right.
to have to, you know, do that. And I, you know, we can talk about this, you know, at more length later if we want or whatever. But this GOP pledge, I think this is going to be the thing that comes back to haunt them, is the pledge they put out before they got into power. And really one specific aspect of this GOP pledge, which is that they wanted to give a constitutional citation for every piece of legislation that they pass.
Mm-hmm.
So with everything that they vote on and that they agree with, they're going to have to cite the specific passage of the Constitution that gives the Congress the authority mm-hmm. to do that.
Well, I don't even think any of them really read the Constitution. And, you know, they've already violated the pledge, apparently, the Republican majority in voting on some bills having to do with health care. Not, you know, this massive health care reform, but as many people know, in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, where it lists our federal government's limited enumerated powers, messing with people's health care and insurance, or Medicaid, or Medicare for that matter, isn't in there. So congratulations to you, GOP. You've already violated your pledge. It seems like faster than Newt Gingrich even could have back
right.
in 94.
And, you know, they've also made their position very clear on what they feel about foreign policy
mm-hmm.
because they've already come out and said that they're against the drawdown of troops in Afghanistan that President Obama had committed to later in, what, mid-2011, which, you know, we'll wait and see if he even says that that's a good idea.
Well, we've got to save the women, Jason. We got to save the women. It's not about Al Qaeda anymore. The women over there are struggling.
That's right. Oh, you mean the human rights and things like that?
That's right.
Yeah, I know. And that's why I always say, well, it's interesting that we haven't invaded Saudi Arabia.
Where, in fact, we've given them like billions of dollars worth of military equipment.
Yeah, we're selling them arms, and it's, you know, one of the most radical, you know, Muslim nations.
Theocracy.
With women's rights are just spit upon. But you know what? That's okay because they're pretty tight with the Bush family, I hear. At least I've seen them holding hands.
Well, they're tight with Fox News, even. Their Saudi Prince bin al-Talal, al-Talaweed, something like that. He actually owns like 7 or 11% of Fox News. So
well, and
it's
that,
always interesting.
That brings up another point that I wanted to talk about today, which is Keith Olbermann.
I love Keith Olbermann.
Right, exactly. You know, I call him, he's like the O'Reilly of MSNBC, mm-hmm. you know, and he was suspended for what it turned out to be about 2 days because he'd given some political contributions to some Democrat candidates.
Wait, he supports Democrats?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh,
he did write some checks, and you wouldn't know it by watching the show. But here's the thing, is people are up in arms about this either way. You know, you got Rachel Maddow, who says he never should have been.
She's a beautiful man, by the way.
Well, she is. She's lovely. And she you know, she's talking about how he never should have been suspended and how Fox News is so much worse. And the Fox News people, or at least a lot of conservatives that I talk to, are like, you know, hey, they're MSNBC. They're just shills for the Democrat Party. But my question is am I the only one who watches Fox News and doesn't see that they're a shill for the Republican Party?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's okay because they're the Republicans, this party of small government. So,
oh,
come on, you can't criticize them now. Come on,
because the Republicans are right it's okay for a news media organization to almost completely favor Republican to Republican policies. I mean, there's no question. That's not a question, is it?
Yeah. We're trying to shatter the left-right paradigm on this program, in case you haven't noticed. And I think something that's indicative of something that's driving this left-right division is MSNBC and Fox News. If you pop it here in Austin, it's on Channel 48 and 49. And both of them, you know, when Glenn Beck's on, they have Rachel Maddow on. Or when Bill O'Reilly's on, they have Keith Olbermann on. And you put it on one show, and you notice on Fox News, they're not talking about what conservatives are for. Rather, they're talking about anti-Democrat. So we see this reactionary mentality coming about where the different parties or the different ideologies, liberalism versus conservatism, seem to be defining themselves as what the opposite party is not.
Yeah.
And it gets caught in this left-right, back-and-forth reactionary paradigm. Meanwhile, we the people are getting screwed royally with the economy, which both parties don't seem to give a dang about changing, continuing the same practices, Federal Reserve, quantitative easing, all that good stuff.
Especially when poll numbers show that most Americans, 42% anyway, identify themselves as independents. They don't even solidly identify with one of these two major parties. And I think that the more that we can get out there and reveal that, you know, these the big media out there, and they are really siding with the major parties, and they're trying to create a division in our society. What we need to do is we the people need to get together. We need to come together on principles that are all about personal liberty, personal responsibility. And don't worry about what these parties say they're going to do. They're lying to us. We need to regroup, and we need to stand up against the state and stand up against centralized power that seeks to take our rights away in the name of Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah. Tell them, Rink.
So here we go. Quantitative easing.
Ooh, I don't, that sounds sexy.
Ooh, what is that? What is quantitative easing? I don't even know.
Well, it's the Federal Reserve, since we are in such dire straits, since we owe money all over town, since we have all these programs which we can't possibly afford, the Federal Reserve has chosen to quantitatively ease our troubles by pumping out $500 to $600 billion worth of dollars into the system.
Yes, they're greasing the skids, so to speak. I really do know what quantitative easing is.
They're saving us.
It's this idea that flooding the market with dollars, with liquidity, is going to be exactly what we need to get out of this predicament. John, I don't agree with that. I think
what a surprise.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, I know my opinions on the Fed are not publicly known. So I'm going to say it right now. I am against the Federal Reserve. I think the Federal Reserve is not about what's good for the economy. It's about what's good for politicians and big banks. Mm-hmm. The Federal Reserve is a legal cartel, a legal monopoly over the money supply.
Mm-hmm.
They're unelected officials.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on here with this quantitative easing is the Federal Reserve is buying treasuries from the U.S. government, which is really just an indication that the demand for U.S. treasuries is softening across the globe.
That's not good.
What the problem is here is that, number one, the problem is that we owe money to China. We owe money to all these other nations.
Bank of England.
Yeah, and they're starting to look at things and saying, you know what? We're not interested in buying as many of these treasuries as we used to. And now they see the Federal Reserve buying them, and what they understand is that that is going to bring the value of the dollar-denominated treasuries that they hold. They're going to bring those down in value.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize exactly what inflation is. It's not just necessarily prices going up. Rather, it represents a devaluation of the dollar. And that's one of the big critiques that a lot of Austrian economics and libertarians have of this Federal Reserve system, is that it manipulates the supply of money in the markets. So what happens if you have $100,000 in your savings account? Congratulations to you, and
maybe you
could sponsor the show. If you have $100,000 in your banking account, and you know you worked your butt off to provide that representation of value, then the Federal Reserve comes along and bails out banks to the tune of $700 billion or prints money. A lot of people don't realize while the bailouts were going on, the Fed was just pumping money left and right that wasn't even discussed through the mainstream channels. But now with this latest round of quantitative easing, this addition of the monetary supply, every new dollar dollar or every new trillions of dollars that get added in, the value is coming from the money that you already have in the system. So it's like a supply and demand. The higher supply you have, the less value there is. And a lot of people don't realize that, unfortunately. The hard work that you've done in the past that's represented in the dollars you have stored away in whatever investment, that value is being robbed from you. You're being forced to work harder, and you're struggling to make ends meet, and it's because of this Federal Reserve banking system.
Well, and something that people don't realize as well is that some of this inflation hasn't hit us yet because the Federal Reserve is currently paying banks interest not to loan money out. A lot of people don't know this.
Free market, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. People say, why aren't the banks lending as much money as they can? Well, right now, they can store it risk-free at the Federal Reserve and actually earn interest on it.
Wow.
So while this idea is out there that the Fed's trying to boost the economy, they're actually, at the same time, doing things that would prevent that money from being loaned out. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's good that it's not getting loaned out there, because the banks have billions, billions, perhaps trillions of dollars sitting there with the Federal Reserve right now, as the Federal Reserve has pumped that money in. That's sort of a floodgate that's waiting to open. Mm-hmm. And once that money starts to be loaned out, the value of the dollars you hold in your pocket right now are going to drop. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see real commodities go up in price. Food, gas.
Food's already going up.
All of these things
surely
that we need. So anyway, we're riffing on the Fed. We're also going to be talking about pointless big government regulations and how those affect the economy. And in the last segment of the show, we're going to have economist Robert Murphy on to talk about what a real free market is and what it's not. So please stick around with us. This is Live Free Austin. I'm Jason Rink, and this is John Bush, and we'll talk to you soon.
More energy, stronger immune power, improved sense of well-being. How many supplements have you heard boast of these benefits? The team behind Centrition believes that supplements should over-deliver on their promises. And Centrition does just that. Centrition utilizes the ancient healing wisdom of Chinese medicine in conjunction with the science of modern nutrition. Adaptogenic herbs serve as the healing component, and organic hemp protein in greens and superfoods act as a balanced nutrient base. Plus, Centrition tastes great in just water. This powder supplement is everything you'd want in a product, and it's all natural. Visit Centrition.com to order yours, or call 1-866-497-7436. After you use Centrition, you'll believe in supplements again.
Have you ever wondered if the news is telling you everything there is to know about important current events? Well, so do we. We're Brave New Books, Austin's own fiercely independent bookstore, located at 1904 Guadalupe Street, one block south of UT. Interested in that book or video that you've heard about from your favorite talk show host? More than likely, we've got it in stock. Give us a call at 480-2503 or visit us at bravenewbookstore.com and let Brave New Books help you read between the lines.
Live Free Austin, Live Free Austin Radio, 98.9 FM, the Big Talker.
More stimulated talk.
That's right. Jason Rink, John Bush, rocking and rolling, moving and grooving. And this is a wonderful segment on the program that we go to all too often, and it's called Too Much Government News. Yeah. So, we'd like to bring you some stories from locally and around the country whenever there is just too much government in our lives.
Well, and I just want to say, you would think that this segment would take a long time for John to prepare for, that he would just have to search the headlines high and low to find an example of this, but literally, They jump out at us every week.
They jump out at us.
It's a matter of deciding which one we want to talk about.
Yeah. Especially living here in Austin. A lot of the you know, we're going to be focusing specifically on stuff that I like to call the nanny state, when the government acts as your parent, in that in order to act peacefully, in order to provide sustenance for your family, in order to contribute to this down economy, God forbid, you have to ask permission to the man, and I don't really appreciate that. So the latest great news that we're going to be covering is, it appears in Florida, actually, there were some raids by police officers with weapons drawn in some instances of barbershops, because apparently there's this string of violent radical Wahhabi violent radical Wahhabi barbers who refuse to get a license. They must be terrorists, Jason.
Yeah, and you know, I think this is a very interesting story, because the number one question that pops into a normal person's mind is, why? Like, why does a barber need a license anyway? I mean, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I think people, when they really stop and think about it, they think, you know, is this necessary to ensure people do not walk around with bad haircuts?
And so we're big proponents of the free market and the government staying out of it, but the market has a solution. If somebody, you know, gives you a haircut and accidentally slips and stabs a knife into your jugular, then people are going to catch wind of that happening, and I, for one, am not going to go to that particular barbershop.
Yeah, I think it only happens once, and word gets out. And just,
but you don't want to be that guy.
Well, you
though.
Don't want to be that guy, for sure. And I do want to say that maybe that's what it is. Is it a safety issue? Because if it's to prevent people from getting bad haircuts, this licensing's not working, because mm-hmm. I see plenty of those every day. Yeah. And so
what are you trying to say here, Rick?
Well, you know, I mean, I did look in your direction, John.
Oh.
But you use the Flowbee, don't you?
The Flowbee? What's that?
That's the haircut device you hook onto your vacuum cleaner.
Like on Wayne's World, the suck cut.
Yes.
It certainly does suck.
Yes, yes, exactly. Well, so here's the deal. I did a little investigation on this, and it turns out that in a number of states, to get your cosmetology license, you need anywhere from 800 to 1,500 hours worth of training. And normally, there's less than 5% of that training is dedicated to actual safety. In some instances, you know, like, I don't want to say medical safety, but anything that would prevent somebody from stabbing you in the jugular with a pair of scissors.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's as little as 4 to 6 hours of training and all of that. And so you compare that to some other states and what they require. Some states, for example, I looked in Ohio. I don't know how recent this statistic is. 1,500 hours of training for an African-style hair braider.
Oh, geez.
Versus 445 hours for armed police officers and 600 hours for a paramedic.
Wow.
So
we know where the priorities are here in the training, folks.
Right, exactly. So you can rest assured that your African-style hair braider has three times as much training in their craft as the armed police officer.
Wow. That makes me feel safe.
Yeah.
When I'm getting an African-style hair braid.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Which I've tried a couple times. It's not really my style, but
you know, but here's the thing, is we've got this situation where what this does is this raises the barrier of entry
mm-hmm.
to somebody who wants to become a hairstylist mm-hmm. or wants to cut hair. You're really creating an unrealistic barrier, and why is that? What's the purpose of that? Who does that benefit?
Well, it reminds me, recently here in Texas, there was a hearing at the state ledge to possibly require, stating that only licensed individuals can do horse, I don't know if it's called husbandry, but basically where they file down the teeth in the horse's mouth so they don't, you know, chew off their tongue or damage their teeth. And sure enough, the people that are lobbying for stuff like that are the veterinarians associations. Much like with this latest healthcare reform, we actually saw the largest firms, the largest healthcare insurance agencies, and the largest pharmaceutical companies were lobbying for more regulation. So what it boils down to for me, I think, is is these larger businesses, perhaps larger nationwide chains of barbershops, are in favor of making these stronger requirements in order to do business in this particular field, because what happens is the little local barber, he may not have the money to attend these classes or the ability to start up or the accounting department to deal with all these regulations, whereas these larger firms, you know, they can just brush it off. So what it does is it weeds out competition in the market, and the big guys benefit from it.
I mean, think about it. If you wanted to invest 1,500 hours of training,
it's a lot of time.
Yeah, it's like 20 hours a week for over a year. I mean, most people who are maybe looking to do a career change like that are probably already working, have families. It's not realistic. And you look throughout history, when you look at medical licensing, when you look at, you know, any type of occupational licensing, the bar association.
Selling raw milk, for example.
Right, exactly. All of these things are normally tied to an existing group of individuals in that field who want to protect themselves from competition. They want to keep the prices artificially inflated to their benefit and eliminate choices. You know, it's interesting. One of the most famous examples of this is in the New York City taxicab medallion concept, which was introduced in 1937. And what it was it set a cap on the number of licensed taxicabs there could be in New York City. And so what's happened is that number was not raised from, I think it was like 11,000, 12,000 taxicabs back in the 30s, 40s, hadn't been raised in over, I think, 50 years, and then they added a few more. But so what happened is the people had to buy these licenses, and now those licenses are so scarce that they sell in the range of $200,000 to $600,000.
Wow.
When somebody retires. So do you think that somebody who is just looking to start a business, picking people up and driving them to locations, can afford $200,000 to be licensed by the city of New York?
Oh, man. And a lot of our big government news is going to deal with licensing, permitting, petty regulations. And again, it always benefits the big guy. It always benefits the one that's already in the market and already has a market position. A great representative of this phenomenon is a local shop called Good Flow Juice. They did hand-squeezed, local, completely fresh, totally organic, non-GMO juices. And they supplied a lot of local restaurants. And what happened is the FDA, our favorite friend, the Food and Drug Administration, who's looking out for our best interests, they came in and shut these guys down because they weren't pasteurizing. Well, we went and interviewed a coffee shop, Bolden Creek Coffee Shop. Check them out on South Lamar. And basically, they were telling us, yeah, we used to get the greatest juice from Good Flow Juice, but unfortunately, they stopped there doing their business. They stopped that service because the FDA. And as we were doing the interview, wouldn't you know it, an Odwalla truck showed up, which is owned by Coca-Cola. So that's totally indicative of the local guy getting shut out by the FDA so the big monopoly Coca-Cola company can come in and supply these local markets. It's not good for the economy. It hurts the little guy. It hurts the local economy especially. And again, it's another example of government intervention coming in and jacking with our Good Flow.
And you know, you make an interesting point, and we're going to be heading into a break, but this idea that many times it's the more liberal citizens who are sort of looking to increase the government regulation, and the conservatives do as well for their own agenda. Don't see how these regulations squeeze out those local business people that are so critical to that buy local and support local economy that many people are proponents of. So it's really time for us to examine these policies and say, who's on the receiving end of the shaft here, people?
Yeah, and now, again, like you said, liberals, a lot of the liberals think that this is going to help the little guy. In reality, it's hurting the little guy. And, of course, this is not an example of free market capitalism. This is monopoly capitalism. This is corporatism. Coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to be joined by Robert Murphy, and we're going to get into a little bit of what a genuine free market looks like. What is capitalism, and why is it receiving such a bad rap? This is Live Free Austin, Jason Rink, John Bush. We'll be right back. Stick around.
Welcome back to Live Free Austin. This is Jason Rink and John Bush, as always, at 3 to 4 p.m. on Saturday. And today we have a special guest, Robert Murphy. Robert Murphy is a PhD in economics. He received that from New York University. He's also a senior fellow at the Pacific Research Institute. He's an adjunct scholar at the Ludwig von Mises Institute and the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. He has also written a series of books. He's written The Politically Incorrect Guide to Capitalism, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Great Depression and the New Deal, and recently a book called Lessons for the Young Economist. And so, Bob, we want to welcome you today, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, I you know, it's very interesting. You know, economics, what do they call that? The drudgery or the miserable science. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so many times economics is one of those issues people don't talk about or aren't interested in. But considering the financial crisis that we've gone through and are still currently in, economics is one of those things that people are a little bit more readily interested in. And one thing I wanted to ask you is, in The Politically Incorrect Guide to Capitalism, you define capitalism, I believe, as a system in which people are free to use their private property without outside intervention. And, you know, that sounds reasonable, but that's a far cry from what guys like Michael Moore might define capitalism. Yeah, right. You know, so really, why do you think capitalism gets such a bad rap? And, you know, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, sure, and you're right. The economics, it is referred to in various places, the dismal science, and people think that it's really boring. And that's partly what happens when I give a public talk somewhere. People will come up afterwards and say, wow, you know, you were, for an economist, you were really funny. And I don't know if that's an insult or a compliment. But it is true that the economics that you learn in school typically is pretty dreary. But it doesn't have to be that way, and that's hopefully what I try to do in my books. And, yeah, you're right, capitalism, it has this bad name. Part of it is because people who claim to be proponents of capitalism really aren't. And so I think that's one major thing. The example, of course, coming to mind is President George W. Bush doing all sorts of things, you know, nationalizing banks near the end of his administration, that if a South American dictator had done that, we would all say, oh, that's socialism for your fascism. Bush does it and says, oh, I had to do this to save capitalism. Mm-hmm. So part of it, you know, the left's annoyance with capitalism is understandable, since there are a lot of people on the so-called right that claim to be in favor of free markets when really they're just, you know, people involved with the government taking over businesses as well.
Well, I think there's a quote from George Bush when he was in office when this crisis was going down, where he said, "I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market," which is interesting. But, you know, you're right. It's this idea that what passes for capitalism or free markets in the United States really is in no way capitalism, and it's not the laissez-faire principles of George W. Bush that got us here. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, just to give your listeners a few examples, people say, oh, yeah, didn't we try laissez-faire, and that gave us the housing bubble, and that's why we're in the mess we're in now, that we tried the free market. But of course we didn't. There were all sorts of regulations that were in place. The SEC got a lot more funding under George Bush because of the Enron and other scandals that happened, you know, early on, right? The people said, oh, gee, we need to crack down and have these tougher accounting standards. And so, you know, that's what happened there. Sarbanes-Oxley was pushed through and so forth. Then you, of course, have the Federal Reserve, which, what is that? That's certainly not a free market institution. That is a central bank that takes all the commercial banks in the country and puts them in basically a cartel. And you have central planners, the current one is Ben Bernanke, deciding what interest rates are going to be and so forth. I mean, if you had some agency that plan what our, you know, world oil price is going to be, or some agency yeah, saying, you know, what our world car price is going to be, we wouldn't call that capitalism. So, I mean, so whether you think the Fed is good or bad, it's certainly not a free market institution. It's the government set up this agency to set interest rates and to determine how many dollar bills there are going to be. So, I mean, these things all contributed to the housing bubble. And then last but not least, all these big firms, these big banks that made these bad bets, under pure capitalism, they would have all gone broke.
Yeah,
and those people would have been gone, and then new people would have been in charge. But, of course, they got bailed out because of the government and the Federal Reserve. So that this is not capitalism. Say what you will about it, but it's not capitalism.
Yeah, it's definitely not. And it makes it very difficult for we enthusiasts and proponents of free market capitalism to sell our message and to sell the joys of the free market, because so many intellectuals and so many publications all seem to be Keynesians, and they blame what's happening right now. Everyone's aware that the economy is messed up and everyone's struggling right now, and unfortunately they've blamed capitalism. But as you said before, a lot of this has to do with intervention into the market. And one of the things that I always like to point out is a lot of the Democrats right now lay the current housing crisis at the hands of the Republicans, but they fail to remember the Community Reinvestment Act and the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act. Maybe you could tell us a little bit how that stuff played into the crisis we're currently in.
Oh, sure, yeah. So the Community Reinvestment Act has been around for a while, but then it was really given teeth under Clinton. And yeah, I mean, that it would just, as the name suggests, the whole point of it was to sort of get banks to reinvest in blighted communities and to, because the allegation was that under a free market, you're just a banker somewhere, and you're deciding where to give loans. And on paper, you know, you might not give loans to people who typically tend to be minorities and come from a bad part of town. That, you know, just as a business proposition, why would you put your money in a business there in an area where there's a lot of crime? You would, you know, go put it in a white suburb somewhere. You know, just speaking in broad brushstrokes here. And that's what people say would happen under the free market. So the government came along with the Community Reinvestment Act and said, no, you can't do that. You, as banks, you have to really bend over backwards to try to put loans in these disadvantaged communities, because how are they supposed to get out of this cycle of poverty if they can't, you know, get new businesses in there and get new loans and so forth? So, I mean, there you explicitly had the government saying, we're going to override the decisions that would happen on a free market, and we're going to cause banks to make loans to ignore their underwriting standards and so forth. And when things were going well, you had, like, the CEO of Countrywide and other people bragging about how they were sort of bending the rules and sort of cutting corners in order to get loans approved for neighborhoods that traditionally, you know, the people didn't have enough collateral and so forth. So they were bragging about how they were ignoring conventional bank practices to advance loans just like the government wanted them to do. And the government, of course, here was mostly Democrats. So, I mean, they're trying to have it both ways. Before, they were trying to take credit for the fact that they were getting loans approved that wouldn't have happened under pure capitalism. And then when everything blows up, they're trying to say, yep, that was capitalism for you.
Yep.
So it's real. And then, like I say, the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates, printing a bunch of money after the dot-com bubble burst, and the people at the time were calling Alan Greenspan the maestro. Well, they're not calling him that anymore. So, I mean, you can say what you will about those policies, but it's not the free market. They can't take credit when things seem to be going well, and then when it all blows up in their face, say, oh, gee, that was raw capitalism.
Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned a couple of things, and, you know, I've gotten in debates and seen different people, and they say, well, you know, Congress is to blame, and then it seems like there are some people who are like, it's all about the Fed. But in reality, you know, the Fed and Congress kind of work together to do these different interventions that really, you know, sort of moved future home purchases into the present, sort of sucked those future home purchases and created this bubble back in the early 2000s. So can you explain a little bit about, you know, this Austrian business cycle theory, which talks about how the Fed is involved in creating these booms and busts?
Yeah, sure. So the Austrian school of economics is this particular school of thought. The people historically came from Austria, but now, like, I consider myself an Austrian, and I'm certainly, as you can tell by my accent, not from Vienna. The Austrians, what they are tend to be very free market, and their view when it comes to what causes the business cycle is they say, look, it's not natural to the free market. What happens is the central bank, the Federal Reserve in our case, tries to stimulate the economy. They print up a bunch of money, dump it in the credit market, and that lowers interest rates. But that's a false signal. It's as if the government and the Fed are tricking the markets into thinking there's more savings than there really are. And so when the interest rate goes down, that stimulates businesses to expand, especially stimulates long-term projects. So, you know, things like real estate, the real estate market responds to long-term interest rates a lot more than some other markets would. You know, like a hairstylist doesn't really care when she's running her business what the interest rate is, whereas a home builder, you know, if 30-year mortgage rates shoot up 20 points, well, that's going to devastate their industry.
Right.
So it goes the other way. When Greenspan pushes down the interest rate, that gives a false signal to home builders and others, and, you know, also fuels the stock market and things like that. So the Austrian view is prices really mean something, including interest rates, and when the Fed pushes it down, it gives this false appearance of prosperity that can last a few years, but just printing up green pieces of paper doesn't really make us wealthier. And so then, you know, the chickens come home to roost, and then we crash, and then we have a bust period when the economy sort of has to re-equilibrate and has to move resources around. And that's, if the government would just sit back and let that play out, you'd have a recession that would last about a year. But, of course, this time around, the government has done everything in its power to reinflate the bubble, to continue to pay people unemployment benefits and so forth. And then people are mystified as, man, why is this recession lasting so long when the government is doing everything in its power to keep the economy the way it was during the boom phase?
Well, and, you know, so you talk about these artificially low interest rates. So what people have to understand is, yeah, the artificially low interest rates and the Congress sort of forcing the banks to loosen their lending standards. So, you know, you've created this whole new situation where, you know, there's no money down, no doc loans, you know, people who don't pay back loans are getting loans, and you've got these interest rates that are at historic lows. So there's that frenzy coming together, right?
Yep. Well, Bob, we're actually coming up on a break, and we're going to get back into some more stuff on the other side. We're actually reading your study guide for the Man, Economy, and State, Murray Rothbard's piece, and we want to chat a little bit about that and how we, you know, we the individual are obviously the best one to make these decisions, and anytime the government gets involved, it's interfering with our ability to make those decisions. So this is Live Free Austin every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. We're chatting with Bob Murphy. We'll be right back, folks.
Are you tired of big government treading on your liberty? Well, so are we. We're Brave New Books, the fiercest independent bookstore in Austin. Located a block south of UT Austin, Brave New Books not only carries the information you need to be ahead of the curve, but we also have water filters, storable food, and superfoods that help you put your health back into your own hands. Contact us at 480-2503, at bravenewbookstore.com, or stop by at 1904 Guadalupe Street.
More energy, stronger immune power, improved sense of well-being. How many supplements have you heard boast of these benefits? The team behind Centrition believes that supplements should over-deliver on their promises. And Centrition does just that. Centrition utilizes the ancient healing wisdom of Chinese medicine in conjunction with the science of modern nutrition. Adaptogenic herbs serve as the healing component, and organic hemp protein and greens and superfoods act as a balanced nutrient base. Plus, Centrition tastes great in just water. This powder supplement is everything you'd want in a product, and it's all natural. Visit Centrition.com to order yours or call 1-866-497-7436. After you use Centrition, you'll believe in supplements again.
Attention, Big Talker listeners. Want to get the real information on the agenda behind the Obama administration's policies? Brave New Books, Austin's own fiercely independent bookstore, has the resources you need to understand the Federal Reserve, international banking, and the forces behind President Obama. Brave New Books is located a block south of UT at 1904 Guadalupe Street. Contact us at 480-2503 or at bravenewbookstore.com.
Welcome back to Live Free Austin every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Jason Rink and John Bush rocking and rolling, moving and grooving, bringing you the latest and greatest news and views and tools you can use in order to live a more free and prosperous life. Like right now we're chatting with economist, Austrian economist Bob Murphy about Federal Reserve government intervention in the market. And as we said right before the break, the foundation for a free society, myfreesociety.com, we are currently doing a study study group on Murray Rothbard's Man, Economy, and State, and this is basically a magnum opus, a treatise on Austrian economics and human action. And one of the things that they go over is the importance of allowing an environment in which the individual can choose how he allocates his scarce resources, and he makes these decisions on allocating the resources based on limited information, and this is being an entrepreneur, basically. So, Bob, maybe you could tell us what happens and how the government interferes with your ability to make these decisions in the most practical manner.
Well, sure. I mean, first of all, you got this sort of natural liberty argument that people own their property and that, you know, what business does the government have of interfering with that? But then there's also the pragmatic, sort of more economic arguments that the Austrians have really developed, which is that, look, the people in Washington, D.C., they don't have the information to know what needs to be done for the economy as a whole. I mean, there are billions of decisions that are made every day pertaining to how resources are used. There are on-the-spot decisions that individual business people have to make. People, you know, they have technical expertise. They know their customers. They, you know, have a sense of which way the market's going. And so, I mean, all those things, it just, once you think about what it would mean for people at the level of the government to sort of plan the economy the way old socialists thought should be done, you realize how impractical it is. And that's really the sort of thing the Austrians focus on. And what they offer as an alternative is the free market economy, where people own property, they make their own decisions, sometimes they make mistakes, but the crucial thing is there's a feedback mechanism, that there's a profit and loss test. So if you're an entrepreneur and you're using resources in your business that actually should be used somewhere else, the way you know that in a market economy is you suffer losses, that your customers don't give you enough money to be able to buy the resources from the people who own them. And so that, you know, to a lot of socialists, the idea of profits and loss seem like some arbitrary thing, but it actually means something. It means that you're using resources that should be used elsewhere. So the price system is like a communication mechanism in the Austrian framework, that it's just a way that free people communicate things to each other through market prices. And it guides the whole structure of production to best satisfy people's desires.
Well, and so the Austrian School of Economics is really the one that creates the greatest threat to the state and really talks about decentralizing power to the individual, genuine free markets. So it's no surprise, in my mind, that Austrian economists are not the ones that are writing for the New York Times and are winning the, you know, Nobel Prize for economics, though maybe it happened when Hayek won it about, what, 40 years ago. So you've got this guy, Paul Krugman, and you've sort of thrown a gauntlet down to challenge him to a debate. I'd like to hear a little bit about who is this guy and why is he, you know, got the crown of being able to speak for what the solutions are in the economy right now, and why? What motivated you to want to debate this guy?
Well, sure. So Paul Krugman is a Nobel Prize-winning economist. I think he won it in 2008 for his work on trade theory. But he also happens to be probably the most worldwide famous Keynesian economist of our time. He has a regular column and a blog at the New York Times. And he has just, you know, he has never met a big government spending program he doesn't like. And I'm not even putting words into his mouth. I mean, he literally says the laws of economics, when there's what he calls a liquidity trap, which is what he says we're in right now, get turned upside down. So he says right now savings is bad, spending is good. He actually goes so far as to recommend mercantilism, that, you know, having protective barriers against international trade right now would be a good thing because that would stimulate demand and so forth. So, I mean, you know, run the printing press. He says there's no harm in further quantitative easing. Go ahead, the Fed can just print up a bunch of money and hopefully something will stick. So, I mean, he is just the big government man, and he ridicules the Austrians, cult, you know, refers them as a medieval cult and so forth. I mean, he just dismisses them. So I obviously think he's totally wrong, and I wanted to challenge him. And so I did a sort of a funny YouTube video promoting my challenge. And the twist is that people make contributions that only kick in if he debates me. Mm-hmm. And so people make these sort of conditional pledges with their credit card. And then, you know, so the total keeps building. Right now it's about $52,000, and we've only had the pledge up about 20 days right now. and where the money goes, it goes to a food bank in New York City that I researched and picked. And, you know, I cleared it with them to make sure they wanted me to do this with them. So the idea is now Krugman has this constantly increasing pot of money that right now is at $52,000 that's going to go to all these hungry New Yorkers if he just would debate me for an hour. And so, you know, he's going to have to explain to his fans eventually why it's not worth his time to debate me, even though it means, you know, whatever it's going to be, $100,000 is going to go to a food bank in New York.
Yeah,
so, right. It's this idea of he's got an opportunity to get a bunch of, you know, selfish, self-interested libertarians to mm-hmm. give to a New York food bank, something they obviously hate, right, is helping other people. So I think it's a genius idea. I think a lot of people really want to see this, and I think we're at a time in our nation where we're, you know, people are open to these new ideas that they haven't heard before, and the Austrian School of, you know, of economics is the only one that really was able to sort of peg and predict this, you know, crisis that we're in. So I really want to thank you for sharing just your thoughts with us and your expertise. Where is that website again that people can check out this Krugman debate?
Yes, it's KrugmanDebate.com, and Krugman is K-R-U-G-M-A-N. So KrugmanDebate.com, that'll redirect you to the campaign site, and you can see the videos and so forth from there.
Great. Well, we want to thank you very much for coming on, Bob. Keep up the good work. For those of you not familiar with the Austrian School of Economics or Bob's work, check out the Politically Incorrect Guide to Capitalism. And again, we're in a very big economic crisis, and I think the way out is for the government just to stay the heck out of it. That's what the Austrian School proposes. So check it out, folks. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, there you have it, folks. Bob Murphy. And again, the Austrian School, we feel, is the only economic school and means of organizing our economic portion of our society that is compatible with the philosophy of liberty, again, because it has the emphasis on the individual. But not only that, we feel that this free market idea, free market capitalism, will go the farthest in order to fulfill the most needs of everybody, everybody's wants and needs. So history has actually shown empirically that this free market raises the standard of living for everybody. And that's definitely a good thing. And we libertarians do care about everybody and everybody having a good and happy life. So we want to thank you guys for tuning in with us today on Live Free Austin. It's been a great show. Chatted about the economy, chatted about more big government news, as always. Talked with Bob Murphy. Again, you can check out KrugmanDebate.com. That's K-R-U-G-M-A-N debate.com. Stick around. Check us out next week, every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. John Bush.
Jason Rink, and we just want to ask you to continue to live free, Austin.
Attention, Big Talker listeners. Want to get the real information on the agenda behind the Obama administration's policies? Brave New Books, Austin's own fiercely independent bookstore, has the resources you need to understand the Federal Reserve, international banking, and the forces behind President Obama. Brave New Books is located a block south of UT at 1904 Guadalupe Street. Contact us at 480-2503 or at bravenewbookstore.com.
More energy, stronger immune power, improved sense of well-being. How many supplements have you heard boast of these benefits? The team behind Centrition believes that supplements should over-deliver on their promises. And Centrition does just that. Centrition utilizes the ancient healing wisdom of Chinese medicine in conjunction with the science of modern nutrition. Adaptogenic herbs serve as the healing component, and organic hemp protein in greens and superfoods act as a balanced nutrient base. Plus, Centrition tastes great in just water. This powder supplement is everything you'd want in a product, and it's all natural. Visit Centrition.com to order yours or call 1-866-497-7436. After you use Centrition, you'll believe in supplements again.
Are you tired of big government treading on your liberty? Well, so are we. We're Brave New Books, the fiercest independent bookstore in Austin. Located a block south of UT Austin, Brave New Books not only carries the information you need to be ahead of the curve, but we also have water filters, storable food, and superfoods that help you put your health back into your own hands. Contact us at 480-2503 at bravenewbookstore.com or stop by at 1904 Guadalupe Street.